Welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. And this is our big one-year special. This is the first year anniversary of the beginning of this very podcast. So we've come a long way. We've given out a lot of pitches. I know that we just celebrated 50 a couple episodes ago. Maybe we should have taken a couple weeks off somewhere in between so that we could just hit these both in 1 week. But regardless, we've done every week for a year. That's pretty good.
I was just thinking that, like, that in and of itself is, I feel like, a major thing.
I don't have perfect attendance in pretty much anything else that I do. So, you know, this is a pretty major accomplishment.
You know, and a little parting the curtain here, like, you've been great about over accommodating, really. Like, sometimes we have weeks where we're maybe doubling up and recording two episodes, but other times I've taken weird weeks off and you always manage to have one ready. And so it's a testament to you, certainly, but also, yeah, I'll accept some of this applause. Why not?
Absolutely. Well, there was 1 week where you recorded and edited by yourself when I was in England or something like that. So we've both taken time away from the mic. I don't know. Have you missed a show and it's just been me and a guest?
I think there was one episode, yeah, where it was you and a guest. And that was interesting, just being able to hear not being part of the process and coming into it afterwards. Right. Was like, whoa, okay, that's what it feels like.
So this is the discussion that we're having on our big celebratory one-year episode, is really accounting for the minutiae of our attendance.
Hey, you know what? Speaking of 1 year, I have got a weird piece of Playwright lore, I guess, for people. And I didn't realize this was happening, but it is a fact. If you go back and kind of look at our original Playwright artwork, I always kind of assemble each artwork every week, sometimes in bulk, but it turns out it looks like if you go from episode one and keep backing up in our episode list, the planet or the sphere of creativity kind of starts to get larger and larger over time until eventually you go to like our most recent episodes and it's almost touching the words Playwright. So I'm going to have to figure out, like, this is an exploding star or something. I need to get it under control.
Well, we'll see next week. Something might change here. It's interesting. It's the kind of thing that, you know, for a long time, Fortnite players were watching the asteroid grow closer and closer to the Earth. And so maybe there's something to that. Maybe that can be turned into a pitch someday. But anyways, we're going to start off our second year of Playwright next week. This week, we're going to be rounding out the first, I guess this is technically the beginning of the second year, but you know what? Let's not get bogged down. We would like to, again, just kind of throw open invitations for anyone who wants to just come on the show and pitch video games with us. We're pretty chill dudes. If you've got some
just two recording chill experience dudes looking or a for microphone, new
friends. Then come along and join the fun. It's a fun game. And of course, as again, as we said a lot during the early episodes of the show, we really do benefit from having a wide array of people throwing us ideas and contributing to the conversation. And so if you could recommend this to anybody or post it on forums or Reddit or whatever, then again, we are immensely thankful for all of that. And that does help the show grow and find new audiences.
Yeah, I learned the hard way on an old show I used to do called Pixels Weekly, which you had come on, I think, a couple times. Mm-hmm. And if you go on Reddit and attempt to share a link to something of your own creation, a lot of communities frown upon this. So we're not going to go be posting this stuff around. We need you, the dedicated listeners, and we know you're there. You're so awesome leaving us reviews and all that stuff. to share this. So tell a friend, sit them down and say, have you heard the good word of Playwright on its 1 year anniversary?
With that, let's get started. 1 year, we've got to come out the gate swinging with some real top-notch ideas today. So, Q, have we introduced ourselves? Oh. We've been here doing this for 1 year.
That's true.
You know who we are. My name is Ryan Heyman, also known as H.
I'm Ryan Quintel, also known as Q.
Right, now that we got that out of the way.
All right.
Right, Q, what do you have for us today?
So, today is hugely inspired by, if you're listening to this in the future, which you probably are, today was Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, and they introduced a new update to a key technology in all their phones, a technology called ARKit, which is for augmented reality. And specifically, this technology allows multiple people to see and share the same virtual objects in the same space. So you and I could each have our phones out and be looking at something and see it from two completely different angles, but it persists if one of us changes it or manipulates it in some way, and we both can kind of experience that layer together. So I wanted to, right fresh out of the gate, take a stab at thinking about something maybe simple. Maybe one person is trying to navigate a maze or a dungeon and they encounter monsters, they're hunting for treasure, and their friends are able to see more information or guide them through this thing and potentially look in close at all the enemy creatures and be able to have data layers as to their weaknesses that could be procedurally generated and a whole data layer as to where to find treasure and all that kind of Neo and Morpheus office scene sort of direction happening. So that is a little bit messy, a little bit raw, but my pitch for 1 year.
We're starting the clock there. This is interesting, the shared virtual space, but in the real world. This would work really well as like an escape room type situation.
Oh, wow, like, yeah.
You could set up a real maze and give each of the participants different layers of information. And again, we come back to something that we frequently do, maybe incentives to betray each other or to not be forthcoming with the information. Or maybe there's like one rogue agent who is there to deceive the other four or something like that. I don't know. It could go in a lot of interesting ways.
Yeah. And maybe once you have the sort of escape room vibe to this whole thing, you could actually lock doors in the escape room with NFC and use the sort of phone to be the key. So only once you solve something in the virtual space will the phone turn into the key that unlocks the next room or the secret box and take you to the next part of the puzzle.
Yeah, you can even set up like a whole labyrinth of a big maze within a building with clues along the way. This could, I mean, you could really do, I mean, it requires having a large building, but I mean, there's a lot of possibilities here. Would you be interacting with physical objects like books and everything, or would everything just be entirely imaginary? Not imaginary, but virtual, I suppose.
Sure.
Better way to put it.
Yeah, reality's getting weird, isn't it? That's a good question. So I think like you could probably place your hand into the sort of phone screen reality and be able to move and drop things, or potentially one of the demos they showed was actually very much like a game that you pitched a few weeks back where two people were using kind of slingshots and knocking each other's bases down.
Okay. Yeah.
And able to do so from obviously various angles, and both of them could experience the damage. So I wonder if you could do, you know, sort of that other layer that escape rooms would normally have to either spend a lot of money to create very elaborate Rube Goldberg machines, or even, you know, turn out the lights and let the cameras give maybe one person the feeling of being Clarice Starling at the end of Silence of the Lambs and the other person the sort of night vision mode where they can actually tell what that person's doing.
Oh, that's interesting. Night vision, I would think, wouldn't be something that AR could offer you, but you could put like virtual objects where you know the walls are to kind of simulate night vision.
Right. Or you could even do a lot of these cameras on the back of them have IR sensors. So you could get the sort of Nintendo Labo, very rough near field look at what is around you potentially.
It's complicated now.
Yeah, it's a lot of this pitch. I felt more of what could you do with the canvas of people having access to the same virtual object in a real space. And so if we want to take it in different directions, you know, absolutely feel free.
Yeah. So you have a virtual object. It's kind of nice, I found, in AR when you have something physical to hold on to. It's not completely, because it has to be able to detect, like, unless you're wearing like gloves or something, the 3DS came with those AR cards, those little things where you pop them down on a table, you line it up with the camera, and it gives you a little model of like Samus or Mario or something. And those were cool because you could pick up the card and move it around. You could pan all around the card and get this 3D model. But it was, you know, it felt like there was something there that you could like physically interact with, something that kind of grounded that experience. We weren't kind of just like nudging at the air and hoping that the camera understood the thing that you were trying to interact with. And so I always like, and I'm not opposed to doing more fanciful implementations of the technology, but I like when AR is more of, as is in the name, an augmentation for reality rather than a completely virtual reality.
Yeah, I started thinking about, would AR be interesting to kind of have people have access to the same heads-up display. But one of the demos on stage was actually two people playing something akin to a Lego game, but being able to see each other's characters in this world and interact with them as they were sort of walking around a table. And that demo always feels like a stretch to me. So, like, I don't know if I'm going to be, if I have enough space in any room I've ever lived in to just have a table in the middle that I can fully walk all the way around and is large enough for multiple things to transpire on it. So I started going down this, if you could control, maybe even with touchscreen or something, just a character navigating in this dungeon. And, you know, if the monsters were procedural, or maybe that person can't even see the enemies and they're trying to avoid them, or they're trying to escape a maze of sorts, and somebody else can say, you can't turn right here, you can't turn left.
If the obstacles that one person can't see are entirely virtual, like, what is the consequence for them getting it wrong?
Right. And I mean, the cheesy answer, I guess, in video games is death. Oh, but like, is that fun? I wonder if it's more like the one person is on purpose trying to encounter one of these beasts or monsters, and the other person instead, like, they don't know which moves to use to potentially defeat this creature. And instead, like, that RPG layer, that rock, paper, scissors, it's really the second person and their information and their input that can say, okay, he's weak to fire right now, or right now she can be hit with a lightning bolt. And these maybe are even time-based, so like, you have to be communicating in real time what's going to be effective in that moment.
It's kind of like the support character in a Persona game that'll give you that extra information. You learn that that's a valuable part of the team, even though she's not there fighting alongside you.
Yeah. Can you imagine even being able to see something like in a Final Fantasy? Oh, this character actually is carrying an important item. You'll want to use your like steel move on them.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. So now what else can we do with a physical space where people can see different forms of information? I mean, obviously you could just write things on the wall, graffiti style, that only certain people could see, but that feels a little bit too direct. Let's see if we can get cleverer with it.
What if we had, okay, this is going to get strange. You'd almost have to be able to put your iPhone on a tripod or something mounted so you can kind of stare into it, or an iPad. But what if one person had to do an operation on a medical patient? I don't know what a medical patient is, just on a patient. And the second person had x-ray vision and they could actually see what was going wrong inside the body. And the other person just had to kind of dig around in a fleshy sort of, you know, carcass or something looking for the problem.
That's interesting because you could do something like that where maybe somebody is, somebody has to stand a certain ways away from the body or whatever it is you're rooting around in. Maybe it's like a sand pit and you have to operate some sort of a crane hand that goes in and scoops the sand out or something like that. And you try to find this key that's underneath and the other person has a detector which shows where the key is and they have to communicate that information from afar.
I also can't help but wonder if you could do some really incredible version of The Witness in a shared AR experience where one person can kind of take a faraway view and tell you what you need to line up to get everything just right, or you can see these virtual terminals all around the real world and use your finger and trace along them to interact.
Now that would be a game that I think would get really popular, a Witness Go, so to speak, where there's just all these witness puzzles hidden around the world.
That's true, and to, people could see each other's puzzles.
Other ones, yeah.
So maybe now you
reset
could like,
every day.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so because the world or the virtual layer is persistent, and instead of Pokemon Go, where they're just kind of like generating for everybody that's in the location, right? Because these are persistent now, you could suddenly have like a completed terminal like collapses and goes back down into the ground. So you're kind of running around and you want to be the first person to activate a terminal around you.
It's kind of a antisocial in a way that Pokemon isn't, where other people around you is actively a problem, you know, because if you want to be the first, you know, it's nice that Pokemon is kind of collaborative in a way, and more so as they updated it with these, legendary encounters and gym battles and such like, and stuff like that. But maybe there's something to that. We're out of time. We've come up with some neat ideas. Why don't you pick one of those ideas and give them a name?
Man, I think the strongest one was where we ended with the multiplayer witness game. Maybe we could find a way to make the puzzles co-op as well. And to pull from the recent pantheon of naming things, why don't we call it Let's Go Witness?
That's both clever and kind of sinister.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go witness something that we probably shouldn't.
That's right. Something illegal.
Yes. That's how Pokemon Go got its legs. Let's move on to my pitch for today. What I'm thinking is you are a singing surgeon and you control surgical tools in 3D, probably snaking their way through bodies and such, trying to find germs or, I don't know, sew together bits of ligament or whatever like a fanciful surgeon would do. But you control it with the tone of your voice. And so maybe up and down are higher and lower pitch, and maybe left and right are controlled by volume or something like that. And so you have an entirely hands-off video game experience of in a 3D space. So we'll start the clock.
I like this idea. First of all, I don't know if this is tied to this at all, but you know about the dancing surgeons, right?
No.
Okay, this is literally a news story within the past few days, but I mean, it's horrible, but 100 women have reported suffering at the hands of these dancing surgeons who, while performing surgery, are dancing all along in the room, like making strange videos of them dancing. It's very strange.
Wait, are they just operating on women?
I think they might. It might be like plastic surgery.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, well, it's very strange.
Interesting. I'll have to read up on this. strange story.
Yes. Go Google dancing surgeon and you'll get very weird stuff. But what I was going to say is I love the idea of moving through an environment, and especially like if it almost feels, and maybe this wasn't the original intent, Rez-like in its approach, the idea that certain sections could swell and you almost find yourself doing a weird Fifth Element opera type of stuff to kind of navigate, and potentially certain tones or if it's microphone, certain vowel sounds or consonant sounds could activate weapons and things like that.
Yeah, maybe if you do a hard consonant that requires you to kind of stop producing noise for just like a little split moment, it's kind of like surrendering control in a way. There are certain sounds that it's kind of hard to recover to doing exactly what you were doing before if you were going in a direction that you liked. And so I like it to feel like a bit of a risk.
Rock Band scores singing by how closely you are to hitting the notes. So I'm almost wondering how you would progress or score in something like this.
Well, if you're moving up, down, left, and right through the tone that you're producing, and then you just have to kind of guide your character through like a 3D tunnel, like there's a game called Brain Pipe, A Plunge to Unhumanity. And it's not entirely dissimilar from a Rez, but essentially you're just in a 3D tunnel and you're dodging things as they're approaching. So I'm thinking something like that could work, but just again, entirely controlled through your voice.
Yeah, I wonder if tone, as opposed to being mapped to directions, if it could almost be mapped to speed. Because I could see, like, if it was that kind of constantly flowing forward experience, both the control being up and down to kind of move your character up and down, but also it would be kind of interesting to me to have this feel like a bullet hell. Like, I was playing Ikaruga or Ikaruga, however you pronounce it, recently. Mm-hmm. And the idea of having to execute certain tones to clear enemies off the screen in a very linear way and bring yourself up to control the very delicate navigation, the 2D XY navigation around something. Like, potentially, you get, like, more of a Skyrim feel, right? To just execute weaponry with your voice.
Maybe speed could be controlled by volume, because then that would kind of teach you vocal control in a way. Because for one, it's kind of hard to control your tone when you're like really, really trying to be quiet. Mm. I mean, obviously you can just get farther away from the microphone, which would be a bit of a cheat, maybe. Maybe it could be cleverer than that. Maybe if you're wearing a virtual reality helmet, then it's kind of stuck to your head.
Sure.
In a predictable, but it's hard to control your tone when you're being very quiet. It's easier when you're putting a little bit of volume behind it. And also when you get nervous, you might automatically get a bit louder, which would make you go a bit faster and kind of spiral out of control a little bit more. And so when things are tense, it's actually going to get harder in a way, unless you learn to really have that self-control and that almost emotional control.
You could even start bringing in elements where, like, the enemies or the things that you're encountering are able to force you to dodge, or their attacks are all different sounds or words or tones. And if you're able to accurately reproduce those sounds, then you're actually able to use their weaponry. So all the possibilities of what your voice can do are unlocked from the start, but it's a matter of like observing the enemy and listening to what they do to be able to harness the powers that they have.
Interesting. I think the main challenge of the game would be navigation, but if you did come up against these enemies, that would throw interesting challenges at you, maybe having to navigate away from certain projectiles and then steering yourself towards projectiles of a certain color, like you would get in a Legend of Zelda game sometimes, or like Ikaruga, like you previously mentioned. I could see that working, and still the primary mode of interaction would be that three-dimensional navigation.
In your mind, is it almost like an endless runner, or is it like you're kind of always slowly lurching forward and you're just controlling the speed and the direction of that?
Yeah, kind of like an on-rails thing. Like, you know, you mentioned Rez, like that's a pretty good place to kind of lock into.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting, the sounds of pushing your voice into higher and higher, because like some people are going to have a limited range, so you almost need to have a calibration when somebody starts up of like, hey, sing as high pitched as you can. If somebody wants to be ridiculous with that high note, they can. But it kind of allows the game to know the range that it's really working with. And for someone with a limited range, it's going to demand a little bit more subtlety and variance.
This could be a way of teaching how to sing almost. Like,
yeah,
you know, as the levels get harder, the tunnels become more precise. Maybe you have those like Rayman-like levels where to navigate these very tight, very precise tunnels, you have to sing a song and kind of follow along with that.
And if the background is mostly percussive, then you could do things that once you kind of know the notes in somebody's range, you can use like the overhead that would be normally devoted to an open world or some complex game mechanic, and instead generate things like harmonies that end up like dynamically swelling as the player is singing, and really creating a very, angelic, surreal experience for the singer.
Interesting. You can record their own voice and kind of like play it as a chorus.
Towards the end of the level. Yeah. Wow. Sure. Like pitch it up and down and layer it on top of each other. And at the end of a level, you hear this like cacophony of yourself. It would be really cool.
Or maybe there are portions throughout the level, little bottlenecks that force you into more predetermined, scripted. That's a fair way to put it. Portions of the track where you have to sing very specific things to navigate this tight tunnel. And then there's three or four of those throughout the level. Then at the end, it would combine them all. And they're all doing these interesting harmonies and melodies and counter melodies and such, and really playing well with each other. And so the players, as they start to catch on, they'll be listening out for those and trying to predict where that's all going.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think it's a good way to expose someone to not only give like an advanced singer a warm-up routine that they have access to, that's also a game, which is gamifying that is great, but you could take somebody who maybe is not a confident singer and like showcase them to themselves in a way that could help them build confidence.
You know, I used to do a little bit of like music recording back in the old days, and I never really got that good at the whole production side of things. Just knowing how to do the harmonies and the choruses and how to mix it all together and how to, you know, make the vocals not trounce all over the instruments or vice versa. But I had some friends in that, that were also interested in doing the same thing, that got really good at it. And I knew that they weren't like better singers or musicians than I was, but they ended up producing some really, really nice sounding pieces just because of how well they knew essentially just how to do it.
I think it would be really interesting too, to be able to share, you know, each other with different players, like, hey, this is how I navigated through this level, or maybe you get someone to express themselves in such a pattern or in such notes that when you play it back to them in reverse or something, it almost reveals a familiar tune or something that they didn't realize they were singing the whole time.
That's true. That's clever. Let's end that there, because we've gone our 10 minutes and this has changed substantially since I started. So let's, you know what? I'm going to call this one. There was an old blog that I used to keep. It was just for like the holiday season of 1 year. Every once in a while, I get in my head these like weird ideas for like projects and stuff. And this one was a comedy blog where I downloaded from Amazon, I think it was like $2 for an album called 50 Must Have Mystic Gregorian Pop Remixes.
Oh boy.
So these are all like techno versions of Gregorian chants, not really techno, but you know, light electronica remixes of Gregorian chants for who knows who. But exactly, yeah. So I bought this album and I put out a blog where I day by day for 50 days, reviewed every track on the album, I think leading up to Christmas or something like that. I had a lot of fun doing it. I discovered a lot about the album. For instance, there are at least two songs on there that are exactly the same recording. I think they just put them on the album twice, probably accidentally. But
I was going to say, was it to hit an even number? Because we're at 52 here.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I can imagine getting to 49 must have pop Gregorian remixes, looking at the rest of your library of pop Gregorian remixes and thinking, I think people could probably live without these. We're going to just have to dub love one of the must haves instead of dipping into this well of only so-so Gregorian pop remixes.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're getting well off on a tangent. The name of the blog is what I'm going to call this game as well, and that is Chanting and Raving, which works in the ranting and raving pun, but also chanting and raving are both musical terms and things you'll be doing while you're playing the game. So that's good enough for me.
It's beautiful.
We're moving now to a submission from the community. This comes from Spencer Saunders, who we've heard from many times before.
Let me ask you this, H. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Before I know, this is, look, at we're at 1 year. We're going to have to start coming up with fun nicknames for people like Spencer who are frequent contributors, and we just need to add some shorthand, some spice. If you're H, I'm Q, do we make Spencer S? This is the type of thinking we need to be putting into effect here.
I feel like that makes it less fun. Like, if we're going to come up with nicknames, we need to find something that really, like, accentuates some aspect of his character. I mean, we could just call him, like, because there's the Wigglin' Joe is his doing, as well as, what is the other guy? Was it, like, Floppy Fred or something? What is the... here we go. Tappin' Sam. Not even close.
In the ballpark.
Someday we can explore Floppy Fred. So maybe there's some sort of a verb we could apply to Spencer's name.
Singin' Spence.
Singin' Spence. Sondin? Is to sond, is that a verb?
To sond. Maybe.
His last name, somebody was a Saunder at one point.
Or maybe they sauntered.
Yeah, okay, yeah, Saunter and Spencer.
Saunter and Spencer. I'm gonna put that in parentheses. I think that could be a keeper.
Saunter and Spencer Saunders.
Mm-hmm.
Says, let me set the scene for you. It is 2 a.m. You are lying in bed, alone as always. Wait a minute. What is he trying to say? I don't think that's true for either of us.
Yeah.
Okay. You're lying in bed, alone as always, watching clips of Penn and Teller's Fool Us on YouTube, as it is the only source of wonder and joy left in your life. We must be characters in the game. Let's read on.
Oh, nice.
Suddenly an ad appears. A sultry voiceover comes in. First you wiggled, then you tapped. Now it's time to stack.
Oh, boy.
I think we know where this is going. All right. The ad ends with a wobbly, engorged hand coming into frame and falling cryptic sequence of numbers, the punctuation 81818. Stack and Lou is the latest entry in the Wiggleverse saga. Wow. Ooh, boy. The game opens with an incredibly graphic depiction of cartoon mischief in which Lou, an even-tempered forklift operator, has his arms mangled in a steamroller accident. Now Lou's arms are super wobbly and in constant pain. You must go to the drugstore and get some painkillers, but they are on the top shelf. Unable to operate his forklift anymore to reach them, you must use Lou's wobbly arms to stack boxes and stuff that you will then climb to reach the sweet, sweet opiates. Due to the strict drug laws in Wiggleverse, Lou must travel the country, climbing shelves and buying pills to live a relatively normal life. Throughout the game, there are not at all subtle references to the previous two entries of the Wiggleverse, hinting that soon they all may come together in an event that will truly be moderately ambitious crossover. Right, well, that is an interesting pitch from Saunterin' Spencer Saunders. Let's open up the bag and see where this takes us.
God. Okay. So wiggly arms on our good friend. What's his name? Stackin' Lou?
Yes.
Okay. And so Stackin' Lou's got wiggly arms. It seems like we're back into our core gameplay of the Wiggleverse, which is a sort of physics-y comedy game.
Yeah, right. This sounds a lot like an Octodad type of game, where you don't quite control as well as you would like to, but you have a goal, a relatively normal goal that you want to accomplish. That is, of course, stacking things so you can reach drugs on the top shelf. But I like this. This is interesting. It's not just a comedy game, which is great. I love comedy games. It doesn't need to be anything more than a comedy game. But in this case, it does kind of set up some interesting, because you have a climbing aspect, kind of like in Catherine, which has some interesting challenges involved. You have the physics-y grabbing things. Maybe your arms are sticky as well, which would help with the climbing, which would help with the grabbing objects and throwing them together. Maybe you can kind of cement an object into the place so you're not constantly knocking them over once you have them where you want them. So in one phase, you have to look around these drugstores and try to find things to stack, to cement into place, and to make into these towers, almost like Mount Your Friends, where once something is a part of the tower, it becomes really glued into place. And then this other phase, which is the climb, maybe you use... No, that doesn't work. You can't use one of your arms to drag something behind you to stack on top of the tower, because you need both arms to do the climb.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to me, too, that one of my favorite sort of gameplay loops is in Crackdown. The act of collecting agility orbs always feels like you're getting more and more juiced to like get the next agility orb. So I love the idea of Stackin' Lou potentially, you know, building to a certain point, or stacking properly to a certain point, and then getting access to, you know, enough of the level one opiates. I can't believe some of the things Saunders has is saying right now. The level one opiates, and that kind of like beefs up Stackin' Lou, and then his arms become like a little musclier, a little stronger. He's a little bit, it's almost steroids, right? And now he's like able to pick up slightly larger objects, or he's able to climb sort of smaller climbs more quickly.
You know what? There's a game called, I remember the name of the game. I don't remember if this is the correct game that I'm thinking of, but there's a game called Tiny and Big Grandpa's Leftovers, which is kind of a cel-shaded physics puzzle game with a lot of different, but I remember there's a one portion of the game where you have to essentially climb up a rock face. And this is where I'm not confident that I'm thinking of the right game, but bear with me. So you're climbing up like a big tower, like a destroyed castle or something, and you use these physics objects to essentially kind of climb higher and higher as you go. So maybe there is something like this. Maybe instead of building the tower yourself, there are these kind of abstract towers that you have to find your way on top of. Or maybe it's a mixture of both. Maybe you have to reach a certain height. The tower has to reach a certain height. And so you have to throw boxes, and just wherever they land is now the climbing puzzle that you have to complete, in a way, kind of like a SteamWorld Dig. I was really liked. I thought that game was really elegantly designed, because your core objective is to go down into the earth. And so obviously you just want to tunnel through the ground, but you also have to find your way back up to the surface by platforming along the route that you came down. And so if you just dug a straight hole, then you're going to have a really hard time getting out of that hole. So you have to kind of create your own platforming challenges as you're performing kind of the opposite task. So maybe in this way, you're throwing boxes. It's a little, I mean, it's easy at the beginning because you're just kind of tossing them into a pile right in front of you, but as they get really high up there, you know, you just kind of have to chuck and just hope it goes in the right direction. And so, you know, you come up with these interesting procedural climbing challenges. And as you, you know, as you climb, sometimes you really have to hang on tight with, as you're going on one of those walls that angles the wrong way above you. Sometimes you have a almost like a nice upward slant, and that way you could, with both of your arms, push off and jump, you know, farther into the, up the mountain, and getting powered up and building up some speed as you're, you know, just Mr. Jekylling your way up this thing.
Yeah. I even like the idea of maybe Stack and Lou, the gameplay of it, like his arms are so long and wobbly that it almost feels like getting over it with Bennett Foddy.
Right, yeah.
Where he is almost like just kind of extending his weird noodle arms out, and you just kind of have to, like, using your mouse or controller, kind of toss them, and then you are slinging your body, like, as if the arms stretch, you can almost, like, Angry Birds your body to the next point in the stack.
That's really cool as well, because you could you throw both of your arms and they just land wherever they land, and they're glued on until, you know, the third move is when you fling your body, and your body just goes wherever the trajectory of the two arms would have sent it. And then you kind of stick down, you plop down wherever you land, and then you start that process over again. So, yeah, I can see this being kind of in the same family as Grow Home and Octodad and Getting Over It and Mount Your Friends and all these really cool games that we've named.
Yeah, and I almost want when Stack and Lou hits, it's going to be interesting because, like, how do you create a stack that is, like, unsturdy enough, or maybe steep enough, or like has enough unreliable points to balance it from being fun all the way to potentially like a fall that feels like, do you know those like weird 25 cent grocery store like things that are kind of cling to glass but then sort of shamble down?
Oh,
at
yeah,
those wiggly
yeah.
guys. Yeah, I'm imagining that a fall for Stack and Lou looks a lot like that, where his arms can kind of save a really bad fall, but mostly just kind of wiggle in the way of things.
Yeah, maybe you have to use the motion controls or whatever to try to grab onto a solid point there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, we always end up going in this direction, but this would, again, work really well in VR. I've been playing The Climb in Oculus Rift lately, and that's a VR climbing game where you're kind of shuffling between anchor points and stuff like that. It's more realistic, definitely, but I could see something like this working with those types of controls.
Yeah, and now I'm reading here from our source text, and I want to think of, this is part of the Wiggleverse, so at what point can Stack and Lou encounter Wigglin' Joe, or what's our other guy?
It's Tappin' Joe.
No, I thought it was Wigglin' Joe.
Oh yeah, that's right. Tappin' something.
Tappin' Sam.
Tappin' Sam, is that okay?
I don't know.
Sorry.
So Tappin' Sam, what if we bring in Tappin' Sam or Wigglin' Joe potentially as a bad guy here, right? Because Wigglin' Joe is kind of a mess. Like, he would be a foil of Stack and Lou, for sure.
Who is an agent of destruction.
Yeah, exactly. He could potentially be following Stack and Lou around, trying to help him, or maybe like accidentally collapsing routes behind. maybe even potentially at times him or Tap and Sam are creating some sort of rhythmic movement to the world that you have to sort of deal with in a sort of dynamic way.
Oh yeah, interesting. These could be like a boss stages.
Whoa. Hey Siri, stop. Oh my god, did you hear that?
Yeah,
okay, she really went off.
What was she saying?
She started giving me the definition of dynamic way.
Okay, interesting. Well, I guess that's as good a place to stop as any.
Holy cow. What a one-year episode I've really contributed to here. Sorry.
No, this is perfect. This is great. Let's come up with a name for this one. Obviously, this is Stack and Lou. I would say for the subtitle, the odds are stacked against you.
Beautiful. That actually plays into Joe and Sam as being foils to Lou as well. So Lou is the shadow, the hedgehog of the group.
Well, now, I think Wiggle and Joe was like an atomic bomb waiting to go off or something like that. So maybe he's the shadow. He's the edgy one. Or is that Tappan Sam? Anyways, the mythos of playwright is getting out of hand, but it's okay. Anyways, that was Spencer Saunders, Sauntering Spencer Saunders, just sauntering in for another pitch. And you can do the same if you have anything to contribute to us. That is playwrightcast.com/pitch, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast. And hey, maybe just say hi. And even if you don't have anything to contribute, we would love to hear from you.
I mean, Sandra and Saunders has done as little as send us a photo sometimes.
Not a photo, a drawing, but...
Oh, yes, that's true. That's true.
We'll take photos as well. Especially sexy ones. No, that would get us into a very weird
legal gray area.
A video game out of that. That would be dubious.
Yeah, well, we would be banned on Steam. Yeah, we wouldn't be able to put it on Steam.
That's true.
Hey, special thank you to Protodome for 1 year of the use of our theme song, Hello World. It's off the album Blue Noise, and I know this is a surprise to you, H, but I compiled a list, and I also want to say a special thank you to all of our year one contributors.
Oh.
That's Thomas Eif, Neil Piper, Saunter and Saunders, Tyler Petty, Steve Hunt, Sam Quirk, Jason Esty, MH Ninja Bear, Zach Singer, David Vandergrant, Lance Barger, David Hartley, Andreas Leonardson, Ashton Herman, Nicholas Cuck, and Kid Skitsy. We literally could not do every episode without you guys writing in and contributing. And we had even more on Twitter. But if we forgot you, we'll remember you again the next time you pitch.
Oh, yeah. What a great group of people. And of course, to all of the people who have come on the show as well, I am pretty sure I can remember most of you, but I don't want to take the risk of forgetting somebody who is our valued friend and compatriot. So, you know who you are.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you so much.
Great. Well, that I think just about wraps our first year of Playwright. So do you want to take us out of the show with a small idea to kick off our second year?
Yes. Our ending idea today is werewolves and vampires trying to take over the world with elaborate skateboard challenges in Tony Hawk's Underworld.
You know what? When I was a little kid, before like Photoshop was even a thing, I used Microsoft Paint, I think, or one of the like free Photoshop, like pre-Photoshop alternates,
yeah,
to rearrange the letters in Tony Hawk's Underground to spell out Tony Hawk's underwear. And I was very happy with myself.
Well earned.
Anyways, thanks for joining us again. We'll see you next year. My name has been Ryan Heyman.
And I'm Ryan Quintel.
Very good. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.